We deconstruct story, song, and the reclining form of the modern American male. From SDPB, today is Friday, March 28th. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, we celebrate the arts in South Dakota. Artist Claire Lockhart brings news of her ambitious series of oil paintings, where she honors the European masters while telling them to step aside for a new kind of artist. Black Hills musician Laura Mills joins us for a moment in sound. We'll listen to an in-studio performance of her upcoming release. Plus, how stories bring us together. We'll meet a pair of South Dakota educators who use story in learning settings to build understanding, relationships, and intercultural development. That's coming a bit later in the hour. We are broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment, and news is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. A new art exhibition opens today in Vermilion. The reception for Claire Lockhart's Subdued Dudes is at the No. 7 Center Gallery from 5 to 7 local time. Lockhart is a recipient of the Pollock Krasner Foundation grant. She joins us from SDPB Studios on the University of South Dakota campus in Vermilion. We talked about the grant and the work it's supporting.
Thank you so much for having me, Lori. I always look forward to talking to you about my art shenanigans.
And I love that there are these updates, but for people who have lost track of this project, you had a grant. How long ago? Has it been a year? No, it hasn't been a year.
It's almost been a year.
Oh, wow.
Last April, I was awarded the Pollock Krasner Foundation grant.
Which is an enormous deal. Tell us a little bit about the intention of the grant, because you're not really a Jackson Pollock-esque artist.
No, I do not paint in an abstract expressionist style at all. But the wonderful thing about the Pollock Krasner Foundation is that they support artists worldwide with whatever projects that they come up with. And for mine, I wanted to paint dudes in man caves.
Of course, as one does. As one does, paint dudes in man caves. And they said yes. And then what happened? Because then you had to start launching really an ambitious project.
Oh my goodness. I have completed some of the most ambitious paintings of my entire life. And this whole process started with research. I got to go to New York and visit museums and galleries like the Metropolitan Museum of Art so I could investigate 19th century European figure painting. Because as our friends know, I love having arguments with old dead guys, particularly French artists.
So when you're at the Met, I just have to know now, did you like make a plan before you went? Did you talk to the guards to help find what you wanted? Did you get lost? Like, what was your experience at the New York Met?
Of course I got lost. That place is huge. But I met with Laura Corey, who's an incredible curator. And so I was able to view particularly Orientalist artwork, but she's an expert in Mary Cassatt paintings. Oh. So I got to just enjoy and observe and experience all this amazing artwork. Some of it I'm just a big fan of. Some of it I want to fight against with my feisty way. Yeah. But all of this inspiration and research led to the compositions I created for my project.
All right, I want to know more about this. I'm not done with the Met. Because do you bring a sketchbook? Did you have questions you wanted to ask her? Behind the scenes things? Tell me more about how you made. What I'm trying to get at here is for artists who are doing research, mm-hmm. how do you make the most of that research?
I recommend doing what works best for the individual. For me, I will often take pictures of the placards, those little signs that say who made the art, what year, what it's made out of, because then I can remember what I saw a little bit better. I also enjoy sketching when I'm able to, but often being able to go to museums and meet with people, whether it is the curator, whether it is the person who is guarding the artwork because they're there all the time, or even your friends, to have these discussions and to really observe and take in the art. Mm-hmm. Some of these paintings took people years to create. And so one thing that I have found when I go to museums, it's best to try not to see everything. Just enjoy a few pieces at first. Otherwise, for me anyway, my brain will collapse.
Yeah, right. You get overwhelmed and you forget. Stuff starts falling out at your feet, mm-hmm. from your brain. You said there are some things that you wanted to just yell back at. Give us an example of when you're in a gallery and you see something that's created by an artist long ago and you just say, oh, I have something to say to that person.
One of the things that really irritates me with even these grand museums like the Met is almost all the artwork was made by men, and often it is depicting women's bodies. And this goes back to a long tradition in the United States and in Europe where women were systemically not allowed the same educational opportunities as their peers. And so there aren't a lot of historic women artists because they weren't allowed in the academies. They weren't allowed to join guilds. And then one thing in particular was they weren't allowed to take figure drawing, especially at a time when painting the human form was the most important thing an artist could do. So when I see these galleries just wall to wall with these nude lounging women depicted by men, I can't even articulate in words. This is why I have to paint. This is why I paint dudes in man caves, to prove that I am a person, I am capable of painting, and I want my paintings to be on par with some of these artists like Jean-Léon Gérôme, Jean-Auguste Dominique Ingres, and a whole bunch of other French guys.
Yeah. So you mentioned the ambition, and then you also mentioned some of these paintings might have taken years to complete by these mm-hmm. masters. You're putting together a public exhibition with highly detailed oil paintings in a year. How do you gear up for that endurance of artistic output?
Well, first of all, I have to apologize for all my friends because I haven't seen them in a year.
Claire who?
I know.
I knew her once. Yes.
I've been locked in my studio like a little cave troll, just swathed in colors. But it is difficult to create art in general, but the amount of detail and drama and this meaning that I'm putting into my art, it takes so much time.
And then when you step back, it's worth it, yeah?
Oh, I hope so.
What did you learn about the form, the human form, that maybe you didn't know before this project?
One thing that I had to paint a lot of with the human form that I didn't have a lot of experience with prior to was various types of facial hair.
Sure, because they're dudes, yeah.
They're mm-hmm. dudes, and almost all of them have some sort of beard, a fabulous mustache. It is challenging, but it's important for me to get those minute details, because if my point is that the work I create, despite not being a man, is good enough to be in a museum alongside these masters, I have to include every detail to convince my viewers that, no, I was there. These are my models.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about the models, because you mentioned, you know, the women who were sort of stretched out and posed by the male artists in history. What's the role of the model for you as an artist to participate in the portrayal?
So I am portraying these brodalesques, so the combination of a bro with an odalesque, so those stereotypical lounging women on cushions.
Yeah.
And most of my models are artists themselves, or they're aware of art history. All of my models that I hire are in on the joke, so they know what I'm aiming for with my message, what the composition will be like. And instead of portraying like an idealized form, it's important for me to show the models as accurately as I see them, because I want that physicality. I want that truth. I'm not going to say truth like the philosophical art historic one with a capital T, but what I'm actually seeing, just to prove my point.
How do you learn to see better?
Well, a couple years ago, I got LASIK surgery, and that helped a lot.
That's scary if that goes wrong. That's a big problem for anybody, but for you as well.
I know. No, but having the patience to observe, one thing, like when I'm teaching other artists, is to help them get in the habit of observing, looking at their model, looking at their reference. We spend so much time seeing so we can paint what we see, not what we think we see.
Yeah, there you go. Paint what you see, not what you think you see. Now, you are the first artist from South Dakota to receive this particular foundation grant. It's very prestigious. Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you.
When do the rest of us get to behold the exhibition?
I am going to debut these ridiculous, meticulous figure paintings on Final Friday, so March 28th at Number 7 Center here in Vermilion from 5 to 7 p.m.
That's Claire Lockhart. We'll take a break when we come back. More arts conversations. We have Laura Mills with us, and our friend Scott Simpson comes back later in the hour. You're in the moment on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. We've got a little moment in sound for you this Friday. Laura Mills is a Rapid City-based singer-songwriter and part of the Dahl Art Center's Emerging Performing Artists Program. She's also with the Transcendent Musicians Program, which you've heard about on the show before. Laura Mills joined us from SDPB's Black Hill Surgical Hospital studio ahead of the release of her latest single called Tempe. Tempe drops on Friday, April 4th. Also joining us, Deb Lux, who coordinates the Emerging Performing Artists Program at the Dahl.
Well, the Emerging Artists Program was started back in 2012 by a group of founding fathers, I'm calling them. It was Scott Grote, Steve Zellmer with Kitty Kinsman, Mike LeMay, Joe Miller, and Lauren Erickson decided that to create a safe, supportive space for emerging musicians and give them a place to experience performing in front of a safe and supportive audience, and that's what we've created there. It's helped to grow so much talent in our community, and it's given people of all ages a place to play music, to hear music, to make connections, and it's created a really nice community.
Talk a little bit about that network and that connection as people hear each other and go show up in the audience for other artists.
Exactly, and like people like Laura, looking forward to meeting people like Abby Leach, because they're going to be playing together at a show. Making those connections, it's also connections with the audience and support of people who, there are people who show up every time we have an emerging artist show. First Fridays is open mic. Last Fridays is a spotlight show that presents the musicians who perform with the open mic, so they have a little bit broader forum to play their music. And some people show up every week.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Many people show up every week.
Yeah. So, and then that creates a culture. It creates a scene.
Yeah. It's created an incredible scene. And this year we've had a lot of activity with our women singer-songwriters. Mm-hmm. We had a showcase, the women's second annual women's showcase on March 8th with a group of 11 incredibly talented women. And it was a tremendous show. Laura was part of it last year. Our first annual.
Yeah. the inaugural. All right. Laura Mills, remind folks you were gone for a while and then you came home. Tell us a little bit about your musical journey.
Yeah. The neat thing about these interviews is it really makes you think about like the through lines of right? your life. I'm like, wait, so what did I do? Why did I do that? Yeah. And I was realizing, I didn't really start writing music until I moved away from Rapid City back in 2013. I moved for some different relationships and stuff, lived in Wyoming and Oregon, and then moved back here in 2019. But I'm from the Black Hills. But I started writing music, I think, as a way of kind of staying connected to myself when I moved away, having a way to figure out who I was, even when I was navigating new places and meeting new people. And I didn't even really start songwriting until I was like 19 or 20. Yeah. I'm 33 now. Yeah, that's kind of how it began.
So were you making music before you were writing? I mean, were you playing and singing and performing, or was it all new to you? Help me understand that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Mm. So I started taking piano lessons when I was about 10. So music started young for me, but I kind of started out playing in the church and then like choirs at school and stuff. I played a lot of piano, did a lot of accompanying. So that was kind of where I started, was with piano. And I played a lot of like classical, a lot of musicals, stuff like that. Some of my early songs, you can tell that's all I really listened to at the time was like musicals and stuff.
You can
stuff.
Hear the influence, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, as I moved away from that as I got older, started listening to more like indie music, more folk, more stuff like this. And I think that's when the desire to write in a different vein kind of came forth.
See, I think that's a beautiful thing because it can be, you can look at, if you're a poet and you look back at the poetry you were writing, when you were a teenager, unless maybe you're Taylor Swift or, somebody who can really mine that well, it can be cringy, right? But it's beautiful because to see your own influences show up, you can watch yourself grow as an artist. You just have to be able to look at it unflinchingly.
Yeah, for sure.
And then say, maybe I should expand my influences, or maybe I want to try something new. When did you start thinking, like, I have something to say in a song, melodically or lyrically?
Yeah, I remember a friend inviting me to play at an event. It was like an all-faiths event, and she asked me to just like play some of my songs. Yeah, I just shared, I think it was like vaguely spiritual, maybe about love, I don't know. And I remember just so many people coming up to me and being like, wow, like that really impacted me in this way or that. And I think something about that stood out to me where I was like, oh, like I feel these things. I can make something that communicates directly to other people and we can both kind of be nourished by that.
Yeah.
And so once that kind of clicked for me, I was like, oh, I guess I should do more of this. And I'm also an introvert, so that's a little bit of a struggle to actually like go out and do that. But once I do it, I'm always glad that I did, and I feel like I'm on the right path, I guess.
I love that. The poet Sean Lidster, who lives here in Sioux Falls and runs Full Circle Book Co-op, when he was on the show, he mentioned people getting up and reading poetry at open mic night and being nervous about it or uncertain, and he said you just never know who is in the room who needs to hear that poem.
Right.
And sometimes you just have to trust the process where I've got a song, I'm going to sing it, I'm going to play it. I do not know who is in the room who needs it.
Yeah, exactly.
But somebody might. somebody does. And then they come up and tell you that.
Yeah, and I think that helps me know, like, okay, I'm doing okay, like still the right motivation and stuff.
Yeah. Deb, has that been your experience too, that the audience, they like the scene, they like being there to hear live music, but also sometimes there are little sparks that someone says, yeah, that is exactly.
Live music is like that. It's about connection. Mm-hmm. And there's, like you said, there's always somebody in the audience that needs to hear what you have to say. And it's really been fun to watch how these musicians like Laura have evolved in the last 12, 13 years from where they might have started at Emerging Artists to what they're doing now. There's a lot of talent in our community that have grown from this, that are outperforming in the community. One example, I'm going to give you a quick fun example. We had a young man, and I'm not going to mention any names because he'd be embarrassed, but he'd come to open mic several times, and I knew he wanted to play, but he never got up. I encouraged him. So finally, he walked over to the piano, and he turned it around so he could play with his back to the audience because he was so nervous.
Yeah.
But now he's out gigging in the universe, you know. So that's part of the process of what Emerging Artists does.
Well, Laura, we would love to hear you. I love talking to you, but I know people are like, we want to hear her play. Lori, stop asking questions.
Oh, no,
but would you like to play something for us today, please?
Sure, I would love to. I prepared a couple songs, so whatever we have time for. This first one I was thinking of doing, it's called Runaway. It's about the period of time where you may still be in a relationship with someone, but you know it's over, mm-hmm. but you're still kind of acting as if everything's fine, you're making plans, you're kind of living with that cognitive dissonance of like, it's all falling apart, but seemingly everything's normal in your life.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what this song is about. It's called Runaway. Let's move to the coast, get away from everything we can't stand anymore. We'll buy a hippie van, park our ride out on the sand, sleep under the stars. We'll get a Labrador and throw some driftwood here and there for him to chase. I'll learn to blow glass and you'll read Foucault and a card while we both live off the land. It all sounds perfect in my mind, but deep down I know that you and I, we're not gonna make it. But maybe if we run away, everything will be okay. Maybe it will be okay. And if we just run fast enough, maybe the darkness, it won't catch up to us. Maybe. Let's move to the coast, hide from the truth, we are not in love anymore. But we'll see the tide pools, watch the whales, rent a sailboat and set the sails. I'll learn how to surf, you'll write your first comic book, we'll live off the royalties. We'll eat ice cream every day, fly our kites and search for sea glass in the bay. It all sounds perfect in my mind, but deep down I know that you and I, we're not gonna make it. Everything will be okay. Maybe it will be okay. And if we just run fast enough, maybe the darkness, it won't catch up to us. Maybe. Oh, maybe I can see through this. I don't think we can make it. Trapped beneath the weight of all our fears, they're a virus living inside us. They're everywhere we go. But let's move to the coast. Let's move to the coast. Maybe if we just move to the coast. Everything will be okay. Maybe it will be okay. And if we just run fast enough, maybe the darkness, it won't catch up to us. It won't catch up to us. Maybe.
Let's move to the coast, get away from everything we can't stand anymore.
Laura Mills from our SDPB Black Hills studio playing live there. All right, that might be a perfect song. Let's talk.
Yeah, thank you.
First of all, beautifully delivered, beautifully performed. We all love your voice. Let's talk about song structure for a minute.
Okay.
Because I don't know how much in the weeds we want to get, but that is perfectly structured song. Everybody
Thank
take
you.
Class. Class is in session, and Laura Mills is teaching you from the very beginning where you set the scene, and then there's a tiny little turn, and then you turn over another card, and then you bring us to set another scene, but there's all kinds of things that you don't tell us, so there's restraint in the song, and that's just the lyrics. I couldn't tell you how a song is made, but I can tell you how a poem or a story is made, and boy, you nailed it.
Well, thank you. So
talk a little bit about song structure and how you built that. Get nerdy.
Yeah, get nerdy. For some songs, I feel like I really think about it, and I am intentional how I structure things. I lucked out with this one where I felt like it came to me really naturally. I didn't use too much thinking brain on it. It was more feeling brain. And I think maybe when I finished that, I did tweak it here and there. But I think I do tend to have sort of a general, like I usually do sort of a verse, bridge, chorus structure. But yeah, like you said, there is a lot of restraint and you kind of choose when you reveal certain aspects of a story.
Yeah.
And I think I lucked out with this one that it just kind of worked out that way. But sometimes I do really sit and belabor that like process.
Yeah. So sometimes you know, are wrestling with it a little more and making it better, and sometimes it sort of helps you in it. And both are okay.
Yeah. Sometimes it helps to have that big picture of like, oh, this is kind of overall what it should look like. And then you just plug in each piece. And yeah, in some ways that is very nice to have that.
Yeah. And then the ending with just this delicate, you've given us something new at the end, another turn. Billy Collins.
Yeah, I like my songs to have sort of like a build. I like them to start at a certain emotional level and then build to a higher one and then come back down. I think that is kind of how I like to structure my songs.
Yeah, I love it. And from the audience perspective, Deb, we just might walk away and go, wow, that is a great song.
Yeah, it's a fabulous song.
Yeah.
And it's been a while since I've heard Laura play, and it's just tremendous, the changes she's made in her singing and in her playing. It's just wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, I want to.
You nailed it.
I want to make another plug for the Emerging Artists Program, because I do feel like Deb is really, and the doll and everyone there has really created a safe space for musicians and artists to experiment. And yeah, it's just such a lovely, safe, intimate vibe there. And so going a few times in a row, you're like, oh, okay, I can like try new things, I can push myself a little, and I know it'll be okay. Like people will support you, and it's great.
Yeah, I can circle back and take another turn if I go down like, oh, you know, that didn't land as what I wanted it to, and oh, that one, people came up and were like, that's the perfect song. Well, I know I got some feedback now that can help me as an artist. This is a great lesson for going out and performing.
And it's also a really supportive audience that is there to support you, even when you make a mistake. They don't care. They're applauding you for even trying. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the wonderful things about that community. Yeah.
Because why?
Pardon?
Because why? Why do we do? I'm just feeling very philosophical today, friends.
I love it.
You just put me in this space, and I'm like, why do
I
we
think,
do this?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, music is, it's a very healing thing, and it's a universal language that we all connect to. Yeah. You might not understand English, but you understood that song when you listened to it. Yeah. And there is a strong community here in the Black Hills that wants to grow musicians. because we have a lot of talent here, and they just want to help grow them, support them.
Musician nursery,
kind of
the musician nursery,
little greenhouse down there in the cultural cafe.
Yeah, but and that's the great thing right now, Laura, is that you can be part of that and part of creating that. This song also explores something painful, something very universal, but then also very specific. The details in it are very specific. What does it mean for an artist, even if this story isn't your story, but you're writing about, you know, something in the human condition that is painful? Where's the healing in that for the person who's making the song?
Yeah, I think what you mentioned about it's universal and specific is really important. I think that's a big part of healing, is you have to understand that you're not the only one that goes through whatever pain you've been through. Like, it's a human experience to have a breakup, to experience the loss of someone dying. Like, those things are all universally experienced. And so kind of connecting to that is very healing, but then having your own specific situation be acknowledged, I think, is key as well. So, bringing in those very personal aspects and sort of balancing that, where you have both sides of the coin together. Yeah.
That's one of the special things about Laura's music, is it's relatable and people connect to it.
Yeah. Oh, I am a fool, but aren't we all? Yeah. in the human dance that we do. Will you play something else for us?
Sure, trying to think. I have a single coming out soon.
Nice.
Next week, basically. It should be ready by Friday, April 4th. It's called Tempe, and this is sort of an older song, and I'm just finally getting into recording. I know we talked about it a couple years ago, but here I am 2 years later, finally doing it. But another program I want to mention is I got connected with the Transcendent Musicians program, and they help fund women and trans artists and non-binary people to get their music into the world and just kind of help get you started. And that has been a huge just blessing to me, to have their support and guidance. And I'm especially someone who's very technology illiterate, it's nice to have someone be like, here, these are the things you need to do to get your music in the machines and out in the world. Like, all of it seems so foreign to me, and they helped make it just understandable and doable. So I'm very grateful to them. So I have this song coming out. It's called Tempe. I wrote this at a time when I had just moved to be with a partner, and like, I was starting to realize, this doesn't feel good. Like, I'm not happy. I was away from my friends and family, but I ended up going on a vacation with some friends to Tempe, Arizona. And I just felt so happy there. I was like, wow, like, it's so nice to have these, like, these old supports and like be in this beautiful place. And I also fix guitars for a living as one of my jobs. And that was the first place I ever went to see people building guitars at Roberto Venn School. Yeah. And I was like, wow, this is a possible life path. You know, so it was this whole journey for me where I was like, wow, this is opening up my life. But like, why am I feeling happy here, but not in my normal life? And so this song's kind of just exploring that question and how I was feeling at the time. So this is an acoustic version of the single that will be coming out.
Nice.
There'll be more instrumentation. Jonathan Jackie will be playing trumpet on it.
Oh, nice.
And I'm very excited about it. It's got kind of a cool vibe, but here's the acoustic version of the song, Tempe. Take me back to Tempe. Must have been my guardian angel, 'cause without you it was hell. Move me with your music, hold me to your chest, and see which way we live.
don't care if we aren't well defined. I'd like to think we're free. Breathing in the smoke, double meaning in the song. We always worked so well together. Take me back to Tempe, the last place I remember. Remember being happy, cactus shadow, volcano choir, and driving all night with you. And city light, take me there, the last place I remember not having. What happened since then? Take me back to Tempe. I remember it well. You must have been my upward ladder, 'cause without you I just fell. Bandsaws are whirring, and for some reason it's raining in Phoenix. But old friend, would you hold me if only we had been something? Maybe I wouldn't be so confused right now. Take me back to Tempe, the last place I remember. Remember being happy, cactus shadow, volcano choir, and driving all night with you. And city light, take me there, the last place I remember not having a care in the world. So what happened? What happened since then? No sleep, no sleep tonight. Let's just drive and drive. No sleep, no sleep tonight. Let's just drive and drive and drive. Take me back to Tempe, the last place I remember. Remember being happy, cactus shadow, volcano choir, and driving all night with you. And city light, take me there, the last place I remember not having a care in the world. So what happened since then? What happened since then?
Laura Mills joining us on In the Moment here on SDPB, playing from our Black Hills studios there. Again, the masterclass could continue. I have like 14 more things to say about metaphor and internal rhyme. And woo! This has been such a delight, and I just really feel grateful to be able to spend time with you. So thank you so much.
Same here. Thank you for the time. And yeah, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, Lori.
Yeah. Come back and let's spread the scene a little further across the state of South Dakota and beyond.
Heck yeah.
Thanks, Deb.
Hey, can I mention that we have an event coming up this Friday, the 28th?
Yes, please do.
It's our spotlight. We do a spotlight every last Friday of the month. And this month being Women's History Month, we're doing a women's singer-songwriter spotlight. And Laura will be there, along with Jesse Hart Pence, Tanya Sky, Abby Leach, and those wonderful sisters, Amy Diaz and Alicia Pozorski, from 6 to 8 o'clock Friday night in the Cultural Cafe at the Doll.
I love it. Thank you so much for coming in. We'll get the word out.
Thank you, Laura.
Awesome. Thank you.
That's singer-songwriter Laura Mills. She's based in the Black Hills. Next, from the power of live music to the power of storytelling, the authors of Circle Bridge, How Stories Bring Us Together, bring us together after the break. You're in the moment on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. A new book by Scott Simpson and Charlotte Stever focuses on the power of storytelling to foster understanding, empathy, and connection. The book is called Circle Bridge, How Stories Bring Us Together. Simpson and Stever are with Compass, Partners in Learning, and they joined me from the SDPB Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City. Scott, tell me a little bit about this latest project, because it's a book, it's a program, there's music involved. How do you explain it to people?
Yeah, well, we really started this, a couple of years ago. We've been doing this work for a long time, and it's been very organic, and we didn't know what we were doing until we figured it out, and we figured out what didn't work and tried a lot of different things. But there was consistency, and we got a group of friends who had worked with us over the last decade together, and we said, we do this thing, and can you help us come up with a name for it?
Okay.
And we had this wonderful weekend at a camp, at Camp Placerville here in the hills, and we kind of identified the contours of it and got a name, Circle Bridge. And so then we said, well, we've got to put that together in a book, because we try to explain to our families what we do, and sometimes it's difficult. We know what people ask of us, and we know the pots of ideas that we dig into as we help them. This is the first time we've really been able to give it a shape.
Yeah, I love that. Charla, this is a book for teachers, community leaders, anybody who's interested in story and storytelling, organizations, businesses. What's your elevator pitch for it when you're telling people what it's about?
Well, when we think about the name Circle Bridge, that does help tell the story, because a circle bridge is an actual physical thing. It's a bridge that's designed to cause people to slow down and look around them and take in what is there. And that's, I think, what we do, is we work with folks, different kinds of groups, whether it's in education or business or clergy folks who we've worked with in the past. It's about having them come, sit, slow down, let's tell our story and get to know one another.
Yeah. That deep listening, that reflection, that humility that you have to bring into that space to create an opening. Scott, tell me about the music.
Well, the music started in an interesting way. We have in the book about 8 educators that we interviewed. We wanted their stories. They had been working with us for a long time, and we wanted to hear, kind of the areas of growth that they experienced, the areas of challenge that they experienced. And so they told their stories. And as kind of a gift, I put together some songs, and we sent those to them just really as a gift. And then we began to think that that might be a useful thing, because one of the things we do in Circle is we have a third thing. It's something that we all in the Circle experience and then move into our interaction. Sometimes it's a poem, sometimes it's a song, it could be anything.
Okay.
But then we looked at that, and it seemed like it needed to be a part of the book. And so we're trying to provide multiple ways of looking at these stories. A story spoken is one thing. A story in song is a little bit different, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Charlotte, there's so many different topics we could, pull out here and discuss. But I want to just ask you about the importance of storytelling about ourselves and how that shapes our identity. Where would you like to begin with that?
I think I'd like to begin with a concept that Parker uses a lot. And Parker Palmer is somebody who's been a mentor to us. He began the organization that we are facilitators for, the Center for Courage and Renewal. But he has a concept called the tragic gap. And I think that's something that is at the heart of what we do. This tragic gap is the space between us when we come together. As I look at a situation, at an issue, at something that I'm trying to maybe improve upon or maybe become an advocate for, it's possible that I might flip out on either side of that gap. I might become overcome with corrosive cynicism, or on the other side, maybe idealism that is just irrelevant. And so when we think about that, the place where action happens, where we can actually move a topic or a situation forward or come together, is in the middle. And so that tragic gap idea, how do we actually come to a place where we can understand one another and can get to a place where we're able to work together, to understand each other well enough that we're able to make an improvement, make connections, make relationship with one another. And right now, I think we're so divided when it comes to especially our political environment, that as soon as I hear one trigger word from you, I suddenly have an idea about who you are and what you stand for, and I form an opinion. And it can be very detrimental when we're trying to work together and work with the public, or, you know, in schools, we're working with families. Yeah. We've got to be able to come together.
And Scott, this reminds me of a story. I've already done the interview. We're going to play it on Monday. Mm-hmm. And it is about people who just disappear into online anonymous chat rooms where they can really be themselves and be unfiltered. But the unfilteredness that they're looking for and reflecting back to them is a call to violence. And so it's a different story for a different time. Mm-hmm. But when I think of your work, I think this is the antithesis of that. This is being in a space with other people and facing one another and listening to one another. It's the opposite of some of this toxic online problematic stuff that we're seeing in America and around the world.
Right. You know, there's a paradox in there, and that's one of the things we talk about a lot. Me being transparent, me being fully who I am, me bringing my whole self to a circle is incredibly important, but it also has to stay in line with my allowing you to be fully yourself and not putting up boundaries or barriers or dangers and traumas that cause you to have to flee or to, you know, put up some kind of mask. We have a set of touchstones, we call them, that help us to do that, where I'm in this paradoxical place where I can be fully who I am and totally honest about it, as long as I'm also keeping in mind that you need to be able to do that too. Yeah. If my honesty cuts your feet out from under you and causes you to bleed, then that's not a good kind of honesty.
Yeah,
it's got to be tempered with respect and with empathy.
Let's leave people with some action steps. Are there things that you would want to draw people into to have them think more deeply about? As we direct them, of course, to Circle Bridge, the book. For the radio listeners, what do you want to leave them with, Scott?
Well, I think it's a time when this is incredibly important. We have trouble getting along with one another. We seem to be very polarized, and that doesn't seem to be, for the most part, moving in a better direction. It's us that has to do the moving. And what that means is, like I just said, I've got to be honest. I've got to be who I am. But I also have to have that capacity for empathy and to defend your capacity to be exactly who you are. And for me to make sure that even if I don't understand you or I disagree with you, that you still have the respect in my presence that anyone would have in my presence. That's how we end that polarization. That's how we create a space where we can all be honestly who we are and be together at the same time.
That's Scott Simpson and Charla Stever. Their book, Circle Bridge, How Stories Bring Us Together, is available on Amazon and Kindle. And that is our show for today. We hope that it served you. In the Moment is produced by Ellen Kester and our Youngemen. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.